It's Friday afternoon. It's cold. It's raining. I feel like I should do a high school football game. This is kind of the way it was at the end of the season for high school football. But no, all that's over. Welcome into the huddle on ESPN Upstate on December 14th as we head to the weekend. Greg McKinney and Lonzo here until 4 o'clock this afternoon. Glad you are along. Drive safely. Road conditions have to be a little sketchy out there with as much rain as we've had. And looks like we're going to get some more tonight and into tomorrow before things get better here. Today on the show at about 1:20, second segment today, we'll talk live to Jim Zocchi, Carolina Panthers Radio Network, about the Carolina Panthers and their five straight losses. Get Zocchi's take on what's wrong with the Panthers and what they need to do to pull this thing out of the abyss in the last three games of the regular season. Starting Monday night against the New Orleans Saints. Primetime Monday night football game. So look forward to catching up with Jim here in just a few minutes. South Carolina and Virginia in the Belk Bowl coming up, and we will hear from both coaches today. Will Muschamp of the Gamecocks, Bronco Mendenhall from Virginia. So those comments coming up as well. Paul Feinbaum talking about Nick Saban, not in a complimentary way. That's something going on with the Alabama coach. We'll let you hear that coming up on the show. Three questions at three. Also, Greta Rogers. The name may mean nothing to you, but she's my new hero. She stood up to the owner of the Phoenix Suns at a council meeting. He made some noise about moving the team to possibly Las Vegas or Seattle. So we'll let you hear what Greta had to say this week about that. That's coming up as well. 844-477-3776. The Health Dare text line is 71307. And we are on Twitter at ESPN Upstate. If you were a true fan, you'd have your Chiefs jersey on today, despite the embarrassment of last night.
Here's the problem. I only have so many Chiefs shirts, and I'm not
wearing all this week.
Yes, and I'm not wearing the same thing twice, 2 days in a row, because it would smell, and I'm not doing that.
Well, I appreciate that. Thankful for that.
I appreciate hygiene more than I do, you know, rooting for a team that lost last night.
Did you stay up to the bitter end?
I did.
You had to, right?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Down to the wire.
I mean, the game ended on the last play. You got to stay up for that.
Yeah, and man, I was watching. I have actually more than you on my Twitter and Facebook feed that's a Chiefs fan. I have a couple, three of those guys out there. And man, were they mouthing off for a while. And then it got a little quiet. It was a great game, though.
See, I've learned my lesson. Anytime I talk stuff on social media, my team immediately starts losing. I am not a superstitious person, but it can't be coincidence. So I'm just not doing it.
It's never a good idea. I've actually typed things out and then deleted before tweeting before saying, you know what? Why jinx it? Why jinx it? And it wasn't Patrick Mahomes' fault. He was very good. I thought he was solid. Didn't turn the ball over.
I blame it on a couple things. I blame it on play calling for one thing. When you're up by a touchdown and all you need is a couple first downs, run the ball. They ran the ball fairly effectively with the Wiggins guys for most of the game. Run the stinking ball.
You don't have Kareem Hunt. I know Damian was okay. Daryl didn't do anything. He had 13 yards. But Damian was all right. Damian Williams,
I didn't know who
yards.
Either one of them was. I just saw it was Williams in the back of the shirt. The one dude, I mean, man, that guy wasn't bad.
No, Damian Williams was not bad, but I do think you're missing Kareem Hunt, and I know you know you are.
Definitely.
So they didn't have that to fall back on, that guy that could just give you 20 carries and pick up some yards when you had to have it. And then, you know, defensively, I mean, Phillip Rivers, is he underrated? I never really liked him. I don't know why. I think, and not that I like Jay Cutler. Do you remember that game years ago where he was taunting Jay Cutler from the sideline? I have that vision in my head. I think of Phillip Rivers. I picture his face on the sideline when he was taunting Jay Cutler. And not that that's ever a bad thing to do.
You know, here's the thing. I don't like Phillip Rivers, but I'd be willing to bet money if he's sitting in this room, he'd be just like me and you. He'd probably be the snarkiest person that you've ever met.
That's not a good thing.
Yeah. He's got a snarky look to him.
Yes, he does. He does. But he is having himself a year, and he had himself a night last night after throwing a couple of early picks. Got himself in trouble, but recovered from that to have a great game. 313 yards, a couple of touchdowns, 26 completions. He was sacked 5 times, but took every hit and kept on going. And they got a great performance by Mike Williams, the former Clemson Tiger. Kind of a breakout game for him. He's been injured. Last year was a disappointing year, his first year in the league. And hasn't done that much till now. But, man, he had himself a game last night. Couple touchdowns receiving last night and one running last night. 3 touchdowns for Mike Williams. How about that?
Yeah, I'm not going to praise Mike Williams.
All right.
Just because if you look, he was like 6 inches to a foot taller than every single DB he was going up against. I think if I'm that much taller, I'm probably going to catch the ball a little bit. Now, he had a good game, but the secondary for the Chiefs is horrible. There's a reason why they have to outscore everybody.
Well, I mean, Mike Williams ain't going to get any shorter, and your secondary is probably not going to get any taller. So you might as well get used to it.
Unfortunately, no.
By the way, Kelvin Benjamin had one catch. One catch.
I know. I was counting. It was like, okay, they mentioned he's on the field. But at least he caught the one. He only had one ball thrown his way, I think.
So. It says 2 targets. I don't remember another one, but maybe so. 17-yard catch for Kelvin Benjamin last night. That was all he had in the game. But Mike Williams with 76 yards on 7 catches. And it was just impressive the way the Chargers, I thought they were on the verge of getting blown out a couple of times. And they just hung in. And then I love going for two. Love that call.
You know, I like it too because they really had nothing to lose as far as, except for the game, as far as that goes. They're still probably going to be the number one wild card. I didn't realize how the whole tiebreaker thing works. So now they're the same. The Chiefs have the tiebreaker. So, or they have like a half game up on them or something like that. So, yeah. Go for it, because you really have nothing to lose. And what a game it was. Man, I cannot believe he was so wide open, though.
No.
I mean, we could have thrown that ball to that guy.
And it wasn't really a pick. It was just they lost him. They had 3 guys go with 1 guy. Cover 1 guy. And they
left. That guy was covered, though.
Yeah, he was covered. He wasn't catching the ball. It was good stuff last night. As NFL games go, especially Thursday night games go, hard to ask for much more than that as the Chargers beat the Chiefs. 29-28 was the final. This is Antonio Gates, the Chargers tight end, ended up with 4 catches for 54 yards. And a nice night for him last night. Here's Antonio after the game.
Antonio, this is the loudest place to play football in the world, and right now it feels like a funeral. What just happened?
I mean, you're talking about a group of guys that constantly fighting throughout 4 quarters. Can't say enough about this unit and what we was able to do today here in a hostile environment. I'm just happy that we got the win, and it's time to move on.
What do you say about Phillip Rivers ultimately connecting on that final play?
That's a staple of who he is. A guy that continued to fight with grit and hard work, and you can see he was just so determined for us to try to get this win, and he led us to a victory today.
As a result of this win, everything remains on the table, not only the division, but also the number one seed. What does this win mean in the macro, in the long term for this team?
Well, obviously, it's put us in a position to get one of our short-term goals, which is to win the division. And that's what we're looking forward to right now. We're trying to constantly creep and try to win a division. We knew this was a good team. I can't say enough, man. It's just about these guys continuing to fight. And now we're in a position to try to win our division.
How are you so calm right now?
I don't know, man. I've been around for a long time.
That's right.
So I'm a veteran. And I just know this. The big picture, it still remains to be seen. I just know we just got to continue to stay focused at, you know, at task at hand, which is trying to win a division and then, fortunately get into the postseason.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, bud. Thank you.
Antonio Gates tied in for the Chargers. Yeah, the deal is the Chiefs are still atop the division because they have a better division record. They're 4-1 in the division. The Chargers are 3-2. So if they both have the same result for Week 16, win or lose, then the division title comes down to Week 17. The Chiefs would need to win at home against
the Raiders.
The Oakland Raiders.
Yeah.
And, the clinch.
Los Angeles, I almost did it. Los Angeles.
San Diego. The Chargers?
No. Los Angeles is playing the Broncos.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a good shot that they're going to end up tied.
Yeah, FPI, ESPN's FPI, gives the Chiefs 74% chance still after losing last night.
I'm trying to get past the interview because he made it sound like that was an impressive pass that was thrown at the end of the game. No, it wasn't.
It was wide open.
It was not impressive.
It was fine. It was right there. It was easy to catch. But, yeah, that was not threading the needle by any stretch of the imagination. But the Chargers did clinch a playoff berth. And, of course, as you said, they'll play the Broncos while the Chiefs play the Raiders. With two games left, the Chargers find themselves in a position where they could either have the number one seed or they could be a 13-3 wild card team. That would stink, wouldn't it? But that may well be one.
The Chargers still have to play Baltimore, and I think the Chiefs have to play Seattle. So, both those games are going to be tough. So we'll see what happens.
Still up in the air, a lot more than it would have been had the Chiefs won last night. So right now, in the AFC, you're looking at the Chiefs and or Chargers. They'll both be in. The Patriots, the Texans, the Pittsburgh Steelers, and likely the Baltimore Ravens. They lost to the Chiefs in Kansas City, and when the dust settled on Sunday afternoon, they still had not been knocked out of the number six spot. Victories by the Titans, Colts, and Dolphins created 4 7-6 teams, but the Ravens have the four-way tiebreaker, and they have a winnable home game in Week 15. The Steelers' loss puts the Ravens back into the AFC North race. They might not even have to get the wild card. Over in the NFC, got the Saints and the Rams, then the Chicago Bears, the Dallas Cowboys, the Seattle Seahawks, and still, right now, it's the Minnesota Vikings with the edge for that final wild card position. Losses by the Panthers, the Eagles, and the Redskins left only six NFC teams with records of 500 or above. So the Vikings have a 56% chance to get to the playoffs, but still alive, Carolina Panthers, Philadelphia Eagles, Washington Redskins, and then barely alive, Green Bay Packers, Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the NFC. So that's where we are. So a little bit of clarity last night. We'll get some more clarity this weekend with the games on Sunday and Monday. 844-477-3776. Let's go to the phone and talk to Delvin up first. Hi, Delvin.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're good. Delvin, what's up?
I mean, I agree with Lonzo. I mean, G-Man, you could do that pass because I don't know the miscommunication that the Chargers had on that two. I'm not the Chargers, but the Chiefs on that two point conversion was unbelievable. You can see them talking to each other during the play.
No question. It was awful. Surprisingly bad miscommunication on a critical play.
Yeah, he's right there in the slot. And both of them were pointing, they were pointing right at him, too. Like, this guy for the real going through, and he's still wide open.
Yep. It's a fun game, though.
Yeah, it was a fun game. One of the best Thursday night games you've had in a long time. So most of them been blowouts.
Yep. Well, we actually had some decent games on Thursday night this year, but that's the best of them, I think, right there. Enjoyed that. It kept my attention all the way to the end.
Yeah, you can see the communication. It was just unbelievable because it was just like, I was saying the same thing. Phil Rivers, because he was wide open. I mean, the ball he threw, it wasn't a great throw, Trevor. It wasn't a great throw. And, if he would have dropped that pass, how wide open he was, I don't think Mike Williams could have went back to Los Angeles.
No, that's right.
He might would have had to move to San Diego.
He's not dropping that one, though. Thank you. Appreciate it, Delvin. By the way, Kendall Fuller, the Chiefs cornerback, having surgery today, according to Adam Schefter. Not immediately clear how long he will be out, but he's their top guy at cornerback, and they are having some issues there. So that's not a good sign going forward for the Chiefs. He played 74 snaps against the Chargers, had two interceptions this season, including the one right before halftime against the Chargers. All right, 844-477-3776. The Health Care text line is 71307. Let's get our break. We'll come back and talk Panthers with Jim Zocchi, Carolina Panthers Radio Network. That's next in the huddle on ESPN Upstate. We're back. Rainy Friday afternoon edition of the huddle. Greg McKinney, Lonzo, ESPN Upstate. Back to your calls in a bit at 844-477-3776. You can always get us on the Health Care text line, 71307, or on Twitter at ESPN Upstate. Right now on the guest line, we have Jim Zocchi, Carolina Panthers Radio Network in Charlotte with us. Jim, how's it going?
Greg, doing great. How are you?
Doing well, Jim. It's been a while since we've had a chance to catch up with you. I don't think we've talked since this five-game losing streak got underway, so I guess I should start there and ask you for your take on what's been the biggest issue for this slide the Panthers have found themselves in.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, outside of the Pittsburgh game, the last four have been close, a combined 17-point deficit in four games. So it's become a cliche around here, but it is just a matter of making a few plays out of all the plays in a game, and usually something like 150, 160 plays. You know, you just can't allow those extreme plays like we saw in Cleveland last week, the 66-yard passes and 51-yard runs, and you can't wipe them out either, but you just have to really minimize and keep those from being giant catastrophe type plays. And I think overall that they played well, and as I said, had a chance to win a lot of these games with the exception of the Pittsburgh loss that began the five-game losing streak. So that's the biggest thing. And then just to break it down defensively, I mean, just to get some pass rush consistently from the defensive line to help out the secondary and maybe prevent some of those big plays is probably the biggest thing going on.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of people question effort, especially on the defensive side. You're pretty close to the team. Do you see any of that lack of effort?
I think it's lack of effort. It's just for whatever reason, they're just not getting traction there. I think, you know, obviously, you know, Julius Peppers is winding down. It will be a Hall of Fame career. They've not probably gotten out of Dontari Poe the kind of disruption they thought they were going to get out of free agency when he came aboard this offseason from Atlanta. For whatever reason, K.K. Short has not been, you know, what he's been in the past, which is a Pro Bowl type player. So with the exception of maybe Mario Addison, there's not been a lot of rush coming from that front. We had one sack last week, and it was some of the smallest guy in the defense, Captain Munderland, the former Gamecock. So it's on a blitz, and it's been that way the last couple of weeks where, like, yeah, they'll get a sack here or there from the defensive line, but if they don't dial up some blitzes, it's not happening, and you can't live with that. So they just got to try to figure out what that is.
Yeah. I saw Short was on the injury report. Is he okay? What do you know about him?
Yeah, I think for now he's probably expected to play. So, you know, names pop up every week with different, you know, nicks and bruises. And Coach Rivera does a good job with veteran players, too, of, you know, if it's even a little bit questionable, just saving them as we get late in the season, especially, so that not worn out. They got that extra day getting ready for Monday Night Football here, too. So I think it looks like he'll be able to play.
And Cam Newton's shoulder, I mean, what can you say about it? Is it they're giving him some rest, I understand, right? Trying to.
Yeah, he doesn't usually throw the first day of practice, Wednesday in this case. Yesterday was with a pushback day, the first day of the practice. He didn't throw yesterday. So and today, very wet, as you mentioned, rainy. So I don't think he did much of anything today just because of the weather, too. But, yeah, it gets that time of year where he's got a sore shoulder. And, you know, whether or not that needs to be addressed again this offseason with some additional look at it, we'll see. But it's not 100%, obviously, and it's been – something that bothers him that he's kind of working through the pain and dealing with the discomfort of it. But I don't think he uses that as an excuse, but it is something that just kind of factors into one of the things that's going wrong with him this year.
Jim, talking to Jim Zocchi, Carolina Panthers Radio Network in Charlotte. What about this whole broom thing? I guess there was a broom sent to the locker room or whatever last year about the sweep. Cam Newton said it was disrespectful. Does that become much of a thing this week?
You know, maybe to him it is. He keeps it in his locker. So he brought it up yesterday during the press conference I was at, that it's something that he keeps in there as a little bit of motivation. But honestly, when you've lost five games in a row and you got swept by New Orleans last year in three games, you shouldn't probably need extra things to motivate you. But if that's like some tangible reminder to him that puts a chip on his shoulder and makes him play better, that'd be great. Coach Rivera was asked the same thing about it, and he didn't care to even address it or talk about anything that wasn't more about the football game itself. So, yeah, I guess the reason he put it in his locker and his motivation, so for him at least it is. And if that gets him fired up to beat New Orleans on Monday, we'll take it.
Jim, there's a lot of talk about the future of Devin Funchess, the wide receiver. His playing time is down. I know he's had a back injury, but give us your take on what the situation is going forward with Funchess.
Yeah, I think, you know, overall his health is probably good. That Detroit game about a month ago, he dropped, you know, four passes or so up there and seemed to shake his confidence a little bit. And then coinciding with that has been the continued emergence of DJ Moore and Curtis Samuel in the passing game, because their numbers have been up, so they're taken away from some of those catches that might have gone to him. And even Ian Thomas at tight end last week, stepping in for Greg Olsen, had nine catches yesterday. So this stuff, you know, it becomes kind of, you know, where one week a guy's up and the next week he's down as far as catches go. So possibly, you know, it could be Funches. Maybe he gets his number called more often this week. So I don't think they're down on him, but just for whatever reason, he's kind of fallen out of the rotation as far as getting as many passes thrown his way.
Well, Monday night, home game with the Saints. That's certainly big. And, of course, three games left, two with the Saints, one with the Falcons. What do the Panthers have to do to get themselves back into the wild card here?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. New Orleans is, you know, tough for anybody. They're 11-2, and so you got to kind of be realistic in your expectations of how you deal with New Orleans in that, you know, Drew Brees and the way they run that offense, the ball is going to come out quick, so you're not going to probably get, you know, four or five sacks. It's just not the kind of game that it's going to be. So you got to get pressure up the middle against him, get it in his face as opposed to the edges. So they got to get some kind of pass rush up the middle against him to try to slow that down and just try to, as much as you can, keep them off the field as much as you can and keep your offense on the field, keep your breeze on the sideline there. But, again, defensively it comes down to overall they're playing solid, but you can't allow those big plays in the passing game. This is one of those tough teams to deal with. And then defensively, New Orleans a little bit better than they've been the last couple of years. You know, very good in stopping the run so far, not as much against the pass. But, you know, even when they just have a mediocre defense with that offense, they're explosive. So the Panthers just can't, again, allow those big plays and maybe some long drives where they keep Drew Brees on the sidelines to be the right formula. And they were close last year. I mean, these games weren't all blowouts. They were able to hang right with them, but they got to figure out how to cap these games off in the fourth quarter and win them.
All right, Jim, last question. I think it was the Charleston Post and Courier that just did a story this week about the possible new facilities in York County in South Carolina. You know, nothing really been said officially about that, but how much talk about that has there been in Charlotte this week?
Yeah, every time one of those stories pops up, it just kind of adds to it. And, the team has not addressed it. They said they're still, at this point, you know, researching and fact-finding and haven't had any formal meetings with anything. So that area seems like, you know, a strong candidate, I would say, for sure, in terms of what they would be looking at, because, you know, a lot of businesses look into South Carolina. And adding that, you know, to Carolina's approach to the franchise, I'm sure, is something that's important to them. So I'm absolutely convinced that they're certainly looking in those areas talked about in Fort Mill and around Carowinds and those areas of South Carolina, but it doesn't exclude some other things that are still being negotiated and talked about right now. But they're probably not quite as far along as some of the stories make it out to be, but certainly that'd be a strong candidate for it.
They even mentioned light rail between Charlotte and that facility. That sounds like a project that would take a little time.
Overnight, it's just gonna pop up with a light rail, especially in Charlotte. Nothing happens that quickly around here, so it all sounds great, and maybe that'll happen while you and I are still working in radio, so we can talk about it and enjoy it. But yeah, some of these things, and you know, whatever renovations or changes or possible relocation of the stadium, in addition to practice facility, all that stuff's going to take some time. I do know the practice facility is a priority, especially on a rainy day like today.
Yeah.
You know, Dave Tepper is really wanting to get some kind of indoor practice facility taken care of as soon as possible so they aren't missing out on time. So that's probably the most likely first step in all those things to happen.
All right, quick prediction. I'm putting you on the spot here, Jim. How many of the last three can the Panthers win?
Well, we do the games, Greg, so we're going to pick all of them because that's what we do. But I've never picked against the Panthers. It'd be like Ron Rivera coming on thinking they don't have a chance. I never pick against the Panthers, so I'm going to say all of them. But you know, they got to play better. I mean, I'll leave it to Vegas for that kind of stuff. But they got to play better, and I think if you watch the team, a lot of it's on the defense. Not all of it's on there. There's been, you know, with the four interception game, obviously with Cam, other things. But by and large, if this defense can hold up and play better, it's going to carry this team further.
Yeah, and they've been close, so it wouldn't be that far-fetched for them to come up with some wins here. Jim, as always, we appreciate it.
Bye, G-Mac. Thank you.
Thank you, buddy. Jim Zocchi, Carolina Panthers Radio Network. I want him to say, nah, they're not going to win any of them. 0. 0-3. Sorry. Don't see it happen.
I don't think that will help him maintain his working relationships and things like that.
So what you think, man? Anyway, no, I think they'll get some of it. They'll get the Falcons, I hope. And I think they can get one with the Saints. One. And that'd be 2 out of 3. Based on what's happened the last 5 weeks, you'd have to take that. Monday night for the Panthers and the Saints in Charlotte. We'll have it on ESPN Upstate if you want to hear the Carolina Panthers Radio Network call. That's down the dial on Classic Rock 101.1. Break time back in a moment. You're listening to The Huddle. This is ESPN Upstate. Welcome back to The Huddle, ESPN Upstate's G-Mac and Lonzo, 844-477-3776. If you want to get in, health care text line 71307. On Twitter, at ESPN Upstate. ESPN.com out today with their list of the top 50 college football players for this season. This is their postseason list, top 50 players. So who do you think made it from the Clemson Tigers? How about from Notre Dame, the team that Clemson's getting ready to play? How about from South Carolina? Do they get a representative on the top 50 players of 2018? So I'm just going back to front here and look for key players here. Dexter Williams, running back for Notre Dame, number 50, just made the list. He had 941 yards rushing, just played 8 games. So it's pretty good. Mitch Hyatt, Clemson offensive lineman, number 47 on the list. They say there has been no steadier force on the Clemson offensive line for the last 4 seasons than Hyatt, who won the ACC's Jacobs Blocking Trophy for the 2nd straight year. Hyatt's played in more snaps from scrimmage than any player in school history. Made the All-ACC first team for the 3rd straight season. Mitch Hyatt. Georgia running back DeAndre Swift is number 46. He ran for 1,037 yards this year. Looking at the quarterbacks, we'll mention those just because they're quarterbacks. Justin Herbert of Oregon is number 44 on the top 50 list. Almost 3,000 yards passing. Todd McShay has him number 7 in the draft next year. Justin Herbert. Benny Snell, running back from Kentucky, is number 42 on the list. 1,300 yards rushing for him. Clemson will see Jerry Tillery from Notre Dame in the Cotton Bowl. Defensive lineman. He's number 40 on the list. 10.5 tackles for loss. Ian Book, Notre Dame's quarterback. Number 37 in the top 50. He had to take over after the season started. Opened up new options for the offense. Finished the season ranked in the top 10 nationally in completion percentage, yards per attempt, and passer rating. He has a 70% completion percentage, Ian Book. So he'll be a key to that Clemson-Notre Dame game for sure. Brian Burns, defensive end at Florida State, they had an awful year, but he was dominant on the defensive line, 9th in the nation with 10 sacks, 15.5 tackles for loss. Brian Burns is number 36 on the list. Georgia quarterback Jake Fromm is number 35 on this list. Nobody else from Trace McSorley, number 29, the Penn State quarterback, 2,284 passing yards, 27 touchdowns for McSorley. Alabama defensive back Deontay Thompson is number 26 on the list. Georgia cornerback DeAndre Baker is 24th. Rondale Moore, good wide receiver out of Purdue, just a freshman, number 23 on the list. Devin Bush from Michigan, linebacker, is 22. Notre Dame player on defense, cornerback Julian Love, is number 21 on the list. Set a Notre Dame record for pass breakups. Mackenzie Milton, the quarterback at UCF, got hurt late in the year. He's number 20 on this list. Travis Etienne, Clemson Tigers running back, sophomore, number 14 on the top 50 list. Travis Etienne, in his sophomore season, dominated the competition, running for 1,463 yards. And 21 touchdowns, despite having 12 or fewer carries in 9 of the 13 games. 8.3 yards per rush average, among the best in the nation. Nearly 1 in 10 of Travis Etienne's carries went for 25 yards or more. And his touchdown rate, 1 for every 8.4 carries, the best by any qualified running back this season. That's the thing when people start talking about, and I'm already seeing it, talking about Travis Etienne for the Heisman next year. I just don't know if he'll get enough carries with that passing game with Trevor Lawrence. And Trevor Lawrence is going to be a Heisman candidate too. Don't you think Trevor Lawrence might get a little more attention than Etienne? You almost have to have, 20 carries a game.
Is it unusual for a team to try to focus on two guys in their Heisman campaign?
Mm-hmm.
Don't they usually get behind one dude?
Yeah, almost have to pick one, don't you? We'll see how Clemson handles that because Etienne's legitimate contender to at least go to New York for the Heisman ceremony, but he's just not going to get, I don't think he's going to get 20 carries a game. Certainly hasn't this year. Did you hear the stat? 12 or fewer carries in 9 games this year for Travis Etienne. And he was healthy. Jerry Jeudy, the wide receiver from Alabama, is number 13 on the top 50 list. Another Clemson Tiger, Cleland Farrell, defensive end, is number 12 on the list. Few pass rushers have tormented opposing quarterbacks as often or with such ferocity as Farrell, the Tigers' standout defensive end. Farrell's 10.5 sacks ranks 8th nationally. His 17 tackles for loss tied for the ACC lead. He also broke up 3 passes, forced 2 fumbles, had 7 quarterback hurries. 26 sacks over the past 3 seasons is the second most by any defender in Power 5, Cleveland Farrell. So he's number 12. Jonah Williams, tackle from Alabama, is number 11. At number 10, Clemson defensive tackle Dexter Lawrence. At 350 pounds, it's almost unfair the way Lawrence can move. He's a force in the middle of Clemson's star-studded D-line, racking up 37 tackles, including 7.5 for loss, 7 quarterback hurries to go with 3 pass breakups. That his numbers are not more eye-popping is a credit to the talent around him. But on pure size and ability, there might not be an interior lineman in the country with more upside than Dexter Lawrence. Number 10. So here's your top 10. Dexter Lawrence at 10. Gardner Minshew, the quarterback at Washington State, number 9. Kentucky linebacker Josh Allen at number 8. He is a beast, for sure. Another quarterback, Will Grier, West Virginia. Not playing in the bowl game. He's number 7. He had 3,800 passing yards. Did not get invited to New York, but he was 4th in the Heisman vote. He did have a great year. Memphis running back Darrell Henderson, the 6th best player of the year, according to ESPN. Number 5, Christian Wilkins, defensive tackle for Clemson. ESPN says there might not be a freakier athlete in college football than Wilkins, the 300-pound defensive tackle who is lined up as an edge rusher, run for 2 touchdowns, been a lead blocker on goal line packages, worked as a safety in the spring game, and has lobbied his coach all season to play some quarterback. One of the most disruptive forces in the country for 4 years on the defensive line, Christian Wilkins. So he's number 5. Your number 4 best player, Alabama defensive tackle Quinnen Williams, sophomore, 43 total quarterback pressures for Williams. Number 3, Ohio State quarterback Dwayne Haskins. Broke the Big Ten single-season touchdown pass record that was set by Drew Brees. Named the conference's quarterback of the year and offensive player of the year. Finalist for the Heisman Trophy after throwing for 4,580 yards, 47 touchdowns, just 8 interceptions. Number 3 for Haskins. Number 2, Tua. Tua Tagovailoa, quarterback at Alabama. Just a sophomore. 37 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. Won the Maxwell and Walter Camp Awards. If not for a so-so performance against Georgia in the SEC championship game and a remarkable season by number 1 finisher on this list, he might have taken the Heisman Trophy. So that tells you who number 1 is.
Kind of guessed that already, but yeah.
Yeah. Kyler Murray of Oklahoma, the top player in college football this year, according to ESPN. Not only did Murray win the Heisman Trophy and lead Oklahoma to the college football playoff, he produced one of the best individual statistical seasons in recent college football history. Murray posted a quarterback rating of 96, which is the highest rating of any FBS player since ESPN began tracking that statistic, QBR, 14 years ago. Kyler Murray is on pace to shatter Baker Mayfield's FBS passing efficiency record. If the Sooners have any chance of upsetting Alabama, it will be because of Murray. Just another special quarterback to pass through Norman, Oklahoma. That's a pretty good list. No Deebo Samuel, by the way, in the top 50. No Deebo. No Gamecocks. But you got, for the Clemson Tigers, you got Christian Wilkins at number 5. You have Dexter Lawrence at 10. Cleveland Farrell at 12. Travis Etienne at 14. So you got a bunch right there in the top 15. And then a little further down the list, going for the Clemson Tigers, you have, and it was way down the list, wasn't it? Yeah, all the way down toward the end of the list, just one more, Mitch Hyatt at number 47. So that's a bunch for Clemson in the top 50 players according to ESPN. 844-477-3776. Health Dare text line is 71307. Let's get a break. We'll be back. You're listening to The Huddle. This is ESPN Upstate. Singing in the Rain on a Friday afternoon, headed into the weekend. It's got two more weekends before Christmas, and really, this is kind of the last real weekend because the next weekend is basically Christmas, extended Christmas weekend, right? Christmas on a Tuesday, Christmas Eve be on a Monday, so that weekend, man, it's getting really late. So get out and get your last-minute shopping done. Or I guess you can still get online and do some shopping and get some things by Christmas, right?
Do not trust it. I would not trust it.
You unless wouldn't you, order online right now?
Although, unless you're willing to spend the money to get, like, next day air or 2 days or something.
Yeah, you
like
get that prime two-day thing if you want to spend the money for that. I ordered some stuff earlier this week, and they said it would be here next week. We'll see.
I love that. Dude, so I guess you trusted it because you were willing to buy it.
I did,
so.
But it was, like, Tuesday. It wasn't this late. I mean, I had some extra days. I think they estimated it would be here like Tuesday or Wednesday of next week. We'll see. I'll beg for forgiveness if it does not. What can I do?
Blame the mail.
Yeah, I ordered it. Plenty of time. Plenty of time, right? Welcome back to the huddle. You know, one of the things, we're talking about the Panthers with Jim Zocchi earlier in the hour here. But one of the things that might be a little bit underrated in terms of Panthers issues is not so much Cam Newton's shoulder injury, but that they've held him out so much from practice. He has not been practicing regularly on Wednesdays and Thursdays.
We sitting here, I'm supposed to be the franchise player, and we're in here talking about practice. Well, Coach, I mean, listen, we're talking about practice. Not a game. We're talking about practice.
See, when that happened, that's Allen Iverson. And when he used to say he didn't need practice, Coach Larry Brown, who was the coach of the Sixers at the time, would say, well, his teammates needed practice with him. That's a pretty big deal, whether you need the practice or not. Kind of the timing gets messed up. Do you think the timing issues that the Panthers' passing game might be having right now could be related to lack of practice for Cam?
I think you got to believe that that is part of it, because a lot of times, especially in the last game, Cam seemed to be throwing to a point and the receiver was not there. Seems like it was Funchess quite a bit, but still, he's throwing to a point and the receiver wasn't there. And did the ball sail on him some? Yes, but it always has, and it always will some. And I think you take that and you're okay with that. But yeah, you got to develop that chemistry. And it's not just, I mean, these guys got to learn, here's how hard Cam's throwing, here's if he goes this way as a 10th, I mean, all that kind of stuff. And there's no way that they're picking that up, especially the younger guys.
Well, that's what Norv Turner said today. He said a month of Cam Newton not practicing regularly on Wednesdays and Thursdays could be leading to a trickle-down effect of timing issues on some throws, not every throw. The other side of that is, what are you going to do? Are you going to make his shoulder worse by practicing him every day? They're trying to rest the shoulder, let it heal a little bit, and then you pay for that by losing a little bit of timing with your receivers. So that's kind of where they are.
But in the end, no matter how accurate and how much chemistry that Cam has with his receivers and guys, it's not going to help the defense.
No, the defense has been a big problem in its own. But that might be part of the offensive issues that the Panthers, at least, are having. Update on Carson Wentz. Speaking of quarterback issues, he has a stress fracture in his back, according to Doug Peterson, his coach, and it could take about 3 months for it to heal. That can't be good. That's like March. That's no good. There are no big games in March. Wentz is being listed as questionable and will travel with the team for Sunday's game against the Rams. But given this estimated 3-month recovery time, it seems unlikely Carson Wentz is going to play again this year. Nick Foles time, baby. Nick Foles is the Super Bowl MVP. Can he do it again? They're digging out of a big hole. That's the problem.
There is no way Philadelphia is making it into the playoffs.
Wentz was listed on the injury report as a limited participant with a back injury consecutive Wednesdays in late October. Asked if the stress fracture was related to that injury, Peterson said he has a stress injury evolved over time and it requires no surgery. I'm not answering any more questions about it. We're playing the Rams in 2 days, if you guys haven't figured this out. Peterson's getting punchy. Tired of answering questions about Carson Wentz and his injury. But the questions persisted for about 10 more minutes today. And Peterson said he does anticipate a full recovery for Carson Wentz. The fracture was discovered as a result of a scan Tuesday of this week, 2 days ago, 3 days ago, according to Peterson. Until you do a scan, you don't know, he said. But we do a lot of testing each week on a lot of players. He said he had no concern about having Wentz play while the injury might have been getting worse. He said there were no symptoms. He was 100%. He practiced. He was not on the injury report. So I had no issue with that. And he said he does not anticipate any long-term issues for Carson Wentz as a result of this injury. He said the fact that he doesn't need surgery on this is the best news that you could possibly have on anybody that has a stress fracture or a stress injury in this case. And he said as long as we take the proper steps to make sure that all our players are 100%, then there's no concern. Of course, you know, when you've got a guy now that's not gotten better, and it's probably going to be out for 3 months. All the questions that come up, should he have been playing when he was playing? Did you make it worse? Did you make it worse? And that's why you get a little punchiness from Peterson and some other people with the Philadelphia Eagles. Not official yet, but appears unlikely that he'll play the rest of the season because they're now saying it could take about 3 months for this thing to heal, and you don't want to take chances, especially where you're in the position that the Philadelphia Eagles are in, and that is the position of trouble. Philadelphia Eagles are 6-7 and battling with a bunch of teams with similar records for the wild card in the National Football Conference. Back on the other side, we'll talk a little bit about South Carolina's bowl game coming up, Belk Bowl in Charlotte on the 29th against Virginia, and hear from both coaches, Will Muschamp and Bronco Mendenhall. That's ahead. If you want to jump on board, phone lines open at 844-477-3776. Health Nair text line 71307. Greg McKinney, Lonzo, and the Huddle on ESPN Upstate.